This is Brand and New from the International Trademark Association. This podcast series explores changes and dynamics in the legal world, now and tomorrow, with a focus on intellectual property.
Welcome to Brand and New. I am Audrey Dovey. While most, if not all, lawyers thrive for excellence and success with their clients, cases, or projects, it's not an easy task to really reach and, more importantly, remain at the top of the game throughout their careers. Our guests today offer two different but similarly stunning examples of successful careers in the intellectual property world. Monique Joe is Senior Vice President, Head of Brands and Content Intellectual Property at NBC Universal Media LLC in California, USA, where she oversees the intellectual property team that supports the development of brands and the production of content for all NBC Universal businesses globally, ranging from Universal Pictures and DreamWorks Animation to NBC and Telemundo. Monique was named several times by World Trademark Review as one of the world's leading corporate trademark professionals. Anthony Dreyer is a partner with the law firm Skadden, Arp, Slate, Meagher & Flom LLP in New York, USA. Anthony is a commercial litigator concentrating on intellectual property, sports, entertainment, and related licensing disputes. He was named several times by World Trademark Review as a leading trademark practitioner and a trademark star by Managing Intellectual Property magazine. In addition to being Fordham Law graduates, they are both unanimously recognized as top-level IP practitioners, high achievers, and forward thinkers. Today, they share their experience, their vision, their tips, and personal observations on the mutation of the legal industry and the challenges raised for beginners and confirmed IP lawyers alike. Thank you, Monique. Thank you, Anthony, for joining us today.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
So you both studied law at the same prestigious Manhattan Law School. To what extent did your academic education contribute to make you the lawyer you are today? And can you identify what such curriculum may have missed? Maybe more sensitivity about strategy or business acumen?
So we both attended Fordham Law School in New York, and I actually really was very happy about my law school experience from the very beginning. One of the benefits I thought from the law school, which really has carried me through my career, was really to the value of teamwork and collaboration. From the very, very first day, it was impressed upon us the importance to work together and to find different ways to really be able to share the knowledge and really be able to work together in order to move the ball forward. And that has been very, very important in my career. I do think that many times law schools can be much more individual driven, and it's all about the individual over the community and, you know, pushing others down in order to advance yourself. And that was not the case at Fordham. So I think that that was one of the things that I took away as one of being the most important values that really stuck with me. And then there were things like the fact that there were a lot of opportunities to have practical skills from some of the classes that I was able to take. So from a drafting class for contract to practical New York practice classes, that really helped me think a little bit more about the doing things on a day-to-day basis and how am I going to get the work done, but also, you know, elevated the theoretical concepts that we've been learning for a couple of years to practical everyday working. And that, I think, has served me at the very beginning of my career, thinking a lot more practically. And then as, you know, as I've gone in-house, it's also about thinking about it from a business standpoint of what does this really mean? You know, taking yourself a little bit out of the theoretical and really thinking about this strategically from a business perspective, more so than just a legal perspective.
Mm-hmm. So I would echo everything Monique said about the educational experience. In particular, Fordham did a terrific job at providing a strong legal foundation and also had terrific specialty courses on intellectual property. And I think it was ahead of the curve in that and remains first rate there. Things like advocacy, client management skills, witness preparation, and things like that, which it achieved through clinical programs and really was sort of at the forefront with some other schools in developing those clinical programs, mock trial programs, mock negotiation programs, and the like. I would say, you know, the other part of it and part of what Monique alluded to is what sort of led to INTA's IP All-Star initiative is that law schools in general fall down a bit in developing some of the non-legal skills that make someone a truly skilled legal practitioner. And that's not a fault of the law schools. They only have 3 years to teach a variety of substantive classes, as well as some of the other intangible skills. And so things like, you know, working and being sensitive to your client's business needs and working in that environment, I think is something that law schools still struggle with too a bit.
In your view, after these years of experience in your respective areas, what makes not only a good, but a great and successful IP lawyer? What is your definition of the all-star IP practitioner?
For me, it's really about a balance. It is being a leader, but also a listener. But it's being decisive, but also being thoughtful. And it's really also being inspiring, but yet approachable. So for me, it's really, you know, I think about it as the yin and the yang, for lack of a better word, of each of those qualities. You can't have one without the other. And so that means sometimes that's being, you know, maybe stronger on one side than other. You know, sometimes that's being more of a leader, you know, and then with listening, you know, secondarily. But then sometimes that's really being the listener first and then, you know, making your decision. So I think that it's about having that right mix of tools in your toolkit. And then knowing when is the appropriate time for each one.
I agree with all of that. You know, I think a bit about it a little bit more analytically in the sense that I think there's kind of two buckets. One is the substantive set of skill sets, the IP subject matter that you really need as a foundation to consider yourself and to be considered an all-star IP practitioner. So understanding trademark law and the nuances of trademark law, copyright, right of publicity, advertising, even, you know, depending on which area you specialize, understanding a bit about patents, trade secrets, procedural practice in the patent and trademark area. And I think even though IP is becoming more and more specialized, there's a need to at least understand an issue spot in other areas of intellectual property, even though that's not where you principally practice. There's a real world example of that. My firm had essentially a trade secret case against two other companies. And it started out as a theft of trade secret case, but part of the ultimate nine-figure jury award in our client's favor was on a trademark infringement claim. And so you need to not only understand at a very deep level the subject matter that you are focused in, but to be able to issue spot other things. And I think all of that is on one side, and the other side are the things that Monique talked about, which are equally valuable. And that's, for lack of a better term, the softer skill set. Things like writing, accounting and understanding and reviewing financial statements, being able to network, to develop clients, to instill confidence in your clients, building your brand, project management, especially the more complex deals get and cross-border transactions get, and certainly the more complex litigations get. There were times where I was managing 20 to 25 lawyers on a litigation. That's not really a project skill you learn in law school. And then communication skills, another critical example. And within that, public speaking skills, learning how to lead a meeting, learning how to deal with clients, learning how to provide attorney feedback, learning how to be on the receiving end of attorney feedback, communicating with senior executives, and oral advocacy, which is not always just something litigators need, but oftentimes in a transaction, you need to persuade the other side that your approach is the right approach. So all of those sort of softer skills are equally, if not more important, particularly the more advanced in your career you get.
Now I have a question more linked to technologies. With the increasing role played by artificial intelligence, do you expect that in 10 years or maybe less, the definition of a top-level IP practitioner be different from today? And do you see it as a threat or as an opportunity, or maybe both?
I think certainly technology is evolving. You know, I graduated law school over 20 years ago when the internet was really just being formed, and have seen the legal practice changes, technology has changed, and I think artificial intelligence is sort of another wave of that technology changing. A successful IP practitioner really has to stay current on technology, both as it affects your clients and their business and how IP is used and sometimes misused, and what fair use means in a digital world where it's very easy to cut, copy, and transform potentially other people's content. And I think AI is another extension of that. It is both a threat and an opportunity, depending on how and whether you embrace it. It's certainly coming to the extent it's already here, and clients are looking for ways to cut and manage legal costs and to have more cost certainty in litigation. And AI can be used to achieve these goals, and technology more generally can be used to achieve these goals. Mm-hmm. So it's an opportunity in that sense, and in the sense that attorneys who are able to understand technology and use it in their practice effectively can better meet their clients' goals and be more successful in the coming decade and beyond. And I think it's a threat in the sense that if you are not staying current, you are likely to be left behind.
So I would just echo Anthony's comments as well. The one thing is that because I sit within a corporation and one that is a media-focused company, AI is certainly something that is the here and now, and the, you know, opportunities there are on the business front. It's certainly for us something that we do need to always be thinking about the opportunities for change and the opportunities for that additional efficiency. All companies are always looking for ways to drive down costs and also do things in the most efficient manner. So I do see that AI will play a role in that. And I do think that as IP practitioners, it's important for us to really be thinking in a forward motion such that we are always thinking about, you know, what are the opportunities there? You know, how is it going to change what we are doing? How should we be pivoting? Because technology and innovation will always move us forward. And it's about seizing those opportunities, you know, as they present themselves.
So we talked about soft skills earlier. I would like to have now your views on how to be a sharp and strong lawyer, because it takes some qualities such as tenacity and combativeness to not only defend, but proactively address legal challenges. What's your perspective on this?
Whether you call it tenacity or grit, it's critical to being a commercial lawyer these days. Principally a litigator, and I think it's an absolute necessity to being a litigator. Litigating a major commercial case is a complex endeavor that, you know, you can pick your metaphor. It's a marathon, a triathlon, a war. I wouldn't quite go that far. But most cases do take years to get to a resolution. They involve tens of thousands of documents, if not hundreds of thousands of documents. You have difficult adversaries who are trying to prevent you from succeeding. Law is one of those professions. There aren't many where other members of your profession are trying to prevent you from succeeding in your job. It's sort of strange in what we do. A major litigation involves dozens of witnesses, multiple experts, jury consulting if you get to that stage, and fights at every stage, including at the preliminary injunction stage, at the discovery stage, summary judgment, trial. And so if you don't have tenacity, grit, stick-to-itiveness, you are not going to succeed. And you know, your question reminds me of a somewhat recent false advertising and license dispute we had where we were the plaintiffs and we moved for a preliminary injunction, lost, had to amend the complaint and retool our theory. We went through almost 3 dozen witnesses, hundreds of thousands of pages of documents, experts. We moved for summary judgment. We lost, which meant we were going to trial, and we almost negotiated a settlement. It broke down and we kept pushing through and went to trial for 2 weeks, which was, and it was a jury trial, physically, mentally exhausting. And at the end, we managed to be successful and won an 8-figure verdict for a client and also secured some important rights under a license agreement for them. So that result doesn't come if you don't persevere. It doesn't come if you aren't tenacious, and it doesn't come if you're not able to reassure your client and instill confidence at every stage of the case, even in the face of some very disappointing losses. So yeah, I'm a big fan of tenacity and grit.
I completely agree. In order to be successful, that you really do have to have that grit. You have to have that perseverance. There's a line between the grit, tenacity, and you know, and sort of being a strong advocate for your client and being, I don't see that as always having to necessarily go hand in hand with being overly aggressive. There's this line that I see between humility and sort of hubris. And I think that that really is important, because I think that to be the zealous advocate for your client doesn't always mean that you therefore have to, you know, try to stomp out your opponent such that there's no life left. So I do think that there's a little bit of a balance there, while being a zealous advocate, that also doesn't necessarily mean, you know, seek out and destroy.
INTA is a global association representing more than 30,000 brand owners and professionals dedicated to supporting trademarks and related intellectual property to foster consumer trust, economic growth, and innovation.
Monique, based on your own experience at NBC Universal Media, what does leadership mean when it comes to managing and overseeing staff across the globe with different work cultures, different legal regimes, and within an ever-evolving corporate scope? And what space do you leave to emotional intelligence in your day-to-day work?
You know, when it comes to being able to lead a team across continents from different cultures, that it really is about having the right perspective, because every office is different. Every regional area will have its own separate management, which means that they have their own goals and objectives. And the way that you meet those goals and objectives are not necessarily going to be the same depending on where you are. And I will say that it's also equally as important to ensure that you are not necessarily only focusing on, you know, one particular territory over another, because I think that that is something that is, that frequently happens when you work for a multinational corporation where you have a headquarters in one territory and then you have regional offices. I think it's very easy for people to sort of be very myopic about thinking, okay, well, if we are a U.S. domestic company, everything has to be done based on principles and practices that are established in the U.S. And I think that to do so really is giving short shrift and really not doing the best that you can by the people who are working with you, whether or not they're in Europe or whether or not they're in Asia. There are certainly differences in how people work, how people sort of see what the same management goal might be, but how they get there is going to be different. So for me, it's really about collaboration. It's a lot about teamwork. It's really about those listening skills of understanding the differences and recognizing that there isn't necessarily just the one right way to do something, but recognizing that frequently the answer is not going to be the same, whether or not you're in Asia or you're in Western Europe. So it really, for me, becomes a lot of listening and then recognizing that, by the way, the legal systems are not the same. So also how you get, you know, how you assume that, oh, it has to be, you know, we have to do it this way, is not going to be the case. Whether, you know, for example, if, you know, you are trying to find out, can I bring an action? Can I do something based on trademark law? That, you know, how do I do that? Who do I talk to? Who's going to be the most important parties to that conversation? That's going to be different in the U.S. than it's going to be in China. And if you take your U.S. centric focus and then do that in China, you will fail. And I think that that actually has been something that we've seen, that I've seen many times with U.S. companies who are doing work in China, is that they assume that the things that they're, that the ways of working in the U.S. are the same wherever they go. I don't subscribe to that. And I don't think that, you know, in my experience, that's not the most successful way of approaching the issue. So for me, it definitely is about listening. It's about collaborating and it's about learning. It's about recognizing that you don't have all the answers and that sometimes it's about figuring it out and looking at it from a different lens.
Sure. And I guess it's also a question of humility at the end. Anthony, do you agree with the fact that client-attorney relationships are still very much based on affinities? And ultimately, how much of being a top IP lawyer involves relying on a high emotional quotient?
Very much so. There's no doubt that this is a service industry. It's something that attorneys sometimes forget. But there are a lot of great IP attorneys out there, and you really need to stand out, not just based on your substantive skills, but your relationships. In litigation, it's particularly hard because some clients will view you as only as good as your last win or loss. So your success in business development, which is not just bringing in new clients and cases, but keeping those clients happy and coming back, is based on those relationships. And that really requires a wide range of skills, not just subject matter expertise. It's asking the right questions to understand and make sure you understand your client's problems, their needs, their sensitivities, and limitations they might have on budget, on staffing, or other limitations. It's trying to understand their business imperatives and objectives underlying their goals and why they're calling you. Really just listening in general, I think, is an often overlooked skill in life, but certainly in the practice of law. And as part of that, managing your client's expectations so that, based on your knowledge of the law and your experience, you can let them know what the likely outcomes are, which I think goes a long way in keeping those relationships happy and making sure your client does not have unrealistic goals. Not always easy by far. Mm-hmm. Coupled with that is trying to make realistic expectations or making realistic predictions, not just outcomes, but budgets. Knowing when to check in, trying to read your client's moods. There are times when they don't want to talk to their lawyers, but you have to push through that sometimes, and other times where you just need to step back. And then I think, most importantly, making sure your client feels like they are the only client that you have, at least when you're working with them. They know you have other clients, but when you're with them, when you're talking with them, they are the most important thing to you professionally, and they need to understand and feel that their goals are your goals and their problems are your problems. That's a critically important aspect of being a top IP lawyer.
And now I would like to talk about INTA and your actions. Anthony, you have represented INTA in nearly a dozen matters, including several Supreme Court amicus submissions involving complex trademark law issues. And Monique, you have been a volunteer with INTA for many years, serving in various committees. Could you tell us more about the presidential task force focused on how to be an all-star IP practitioner, established by the 2020 INTA president, Ayala Deutsch, and that you are a member of?
I am very excited by this presidential task force. I think it's very forward-thinking by Ayala. This is becoming very current of an issue of recognizing, and I think it's so important to really think about it as an opportunity as well. Being an all-star IP practitioner is something that, INT hasn't focused on so much in the past. And for me, it really is thinking about all of those skills that it takes to really be an all-star IP practitioner. We all know them when we see them, but many people sort of don't recognize all of those other skills and think that, oh, if I'm just a good trademark lawyer, then that's all I need. To be an all-star, it's more than that. It's more than, just knowing your trademark law. Being a good trademark lawyer is only going to get you so far in my world, thinking about this from an in-house perspective. You want a lawyer who's thinking about all of your issues with you as a business partner. You want your lawyer to know everything that you do, and you want them to have taken all of the information that you've given them and then to synthesize that in a way that is most useful to you as a business partner. It is really exciting to be involved in this project because I do think that it's such an opportunity for people to really think about their careers and their positions within the companies, and then their own sort of career development in a very different way.
Yeah, I share Monique's excitement and enthusiasm for this project, and we will be working with top IP practitioners throughout the country and really try to synthesize much of what we've been discussing on this podcast, what skills lawyers and trademark practitioners should have at various stages of their career. And I think more important than just identifying them, hopefully giving them tools that they can use to go about acquiring and developing those skills. And we really want to be as practical as possible in providing resources. And we also hope that this has broad applicability, not just something that junior attorneys can use, but more senior attorneys can use, both as sort of a checklist against where they are professionally, but also as a tool for them to use with attorneys that they hopefully are mentoring throughout their career, as sort of a touchstone to see where they are in their careers and what things they could be doing to improve.
Thank you very much. It looks very exciting, and we all look forward to more information on this task force. Now I have a few rapid-fire questions for you. Do you have any advice to the new generation of IP lawyers to become an all-star IP practitioner?
I'm borrowing Anthony's grit.
I'll use three words if that's okay. Watch this space, which is to say this is exactly what Monique and I and others will be working on. And it'll be more than one word because it's a little hard to synthesize. So I'm going to take the coward's way out and say watch this space.
And where do you take your inspiration from?
I would say my kids. I have an 8-year-old son and a daughter who in 19 days will be 5, as she reminds everybody every chance she gets. I think they inspire me in a lot of different, terrific ways. Certainly to be more present in not just my time with them, but in all things I do, to be a better listener, to be a better cook at home, to have more enthusiasm, you know, just try and be a better person. That's one of the great things about having kids. And, you know, we all fall short of it, but at least it renews my enthusiasm, all of those things.
Yeah, I think that I take my inspiration from my husband also, because he is always pushing me to be a better person and do all of those things, you know, that I don't want to do. So, which is always a great thing, because we've sort of been together a long time. And so he knows me very well. He knows when I'm trying to dodge something. He knows when I'm not trying, you know, when I don't want to tackle an issue or have that difficult conversation. He also knows when, you know, when I'm only sort of dialing something in, for example. And that is really, really valuable to me, to know that, you know, to have somebody in your corner cheering you on, but also making sure that you're sort of staying on track.
And the last book you read, and it will be my last question.
I think mine was Crazy Rich Asians.
I will say I'm just starting. I haven't read for pleasure in a while. I'm just starting Creativity Inc., which is by one of the co-founders of Pixar. It's a little bit older, and it's been on my to-read list for a long time, but it's really a great resource on how to foster a creative and productive environment, which I think often gets overlooked in the practice of law. But creativity is an important part of what we do, and problem solving is an important part of what we do. So hopefully, as I get through it, it will provide some thought in that direction.
Thank you very much, Monique. Thank you very much, Anthony.
My pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
My guests today were Monique Zhou, Senior Vice President, Head of Brands and Content Intellectual Property at NBC Universal Media, and Anthony Dreyer, partner with the law firms Skadden Arp, Slate, Meager, and Flom LLP.
Thank you for listening to Brand and New, brought to you by the International Trademark Association. Be sure to tune in every 2 weeks on Tuesday for new episodes. If you like today's podcast, please subscribe and share it. We are always looking for new people to discover Brand and New. And to learn more about INTA, its resources and events, please visit www.inta.org.